You're listening to Harrismith Radio. Hi there, I'm your host, Wayne McPhail. This episode is all about hens and hops. First up, we head to Port Hope and learn about raising urban chickens, not just for the eggs, but for the companionship. Next, Ben Cullen, the youngest generation of the Cullen Garden Dynasty, tells us about hops as an ornamental. They're not just for IPAs anymore. By the way, if you want to read Harrismith Magazine instead of listen to it, you can subscribe to the print version online at harrismithmag.com. And you can find Harrismith Magazine on selected newsstands across Canada. But for now, settle in for the next half hour of Harrismith Radio. Signe Langford is a cook, a book author, a gardener, and a lover of all things chicken. She grew up with hens and then years later rediscovered their wonders as an urban chicken activist in Toronto, bylaws be damned. These days she has four hens, she calls them her girls, in Port Hope, Ontario, another community not so keen on the practice. But Langford is devoted to her girls, not just for the eggs, but for their beauty, personalities, and friendship. Here's our conversation. Signe, thanks very much for joining us. We're going to talk about chickens, and you've had a relationship with chickens and backyard chickens and urban chickens since you were a kid. Let's go right back there and start
all
with history.
All the way back. Yeah, I think we had chickens when I was growing up. I have pictures of myself with little baby chicks when I couldn't have been much more than three or four. And when you have them as a kid, boy, they sure get under your skin, and you really develop an affinity for them, and almost like a real connection with them. They're a fascinating creature, and once you have them in your life, you kind of always want them in your life. So I had them when I was little and living at home, but of course I did lose touch with my chicken sisters when I was a busy young person going to school and having boyfriends and then going to college and working hard and living in apartments and not having the space or the time. But it was around, I was living in a little tiny backyard place in Toronto. I had a wee tiny house and a backyard, and this would have been, I don't know, around 2006 or 7, and there was rumbling. People were talking about urban hens, allowing urban hens, and I think it had come to a lot of folks living in Toronto, our awareness that, you know what, they can do it in Paris. You can keep chickens on a balcony in Paris if they're a small breed. People in beautiful downtown London, England, have chickens in their backyards. And sort of thinking was, well, if it's good enough for London and Paris, why isn't it good enough for us here in Toronto, right? So there was a massive push, and there were depositions at City Hall, there were petitions there, you know.
And how did that work out for you?
Not well, because that was the Ford years. And quite frankly, they were disinterested in everything. It was a disaster, if you can recall. I know I've tried to block most of it out, but it was an embarrassing disaster of a time in Toronto's history.
And you could have crack, but not cracked eggs.
Exactly. Oh, my Lord. I think the only chicken poor old Rob Ford was acquainted with was in a bucket. So he had no interest in this at all. So that went away. But there were four councillors in Toronto: Joe Mihevic, Sarah Doucette, Mary Margaret McMahon, and Jason, my gosh, I can't remember his last name right now. Isn't that terrible? But they really, really worked hard on this to get it for Toronto. And I was actually just talking to Joe last night, and he said, you know, he worked 10 years on this, 10 years to finally get what they got in 2018, which was a pilot program, so that now there's four wards in the city of Toronto that were allowed to keep hens. And at last count right now, there are 79 households registered and 230 registered hens in the city of Toronto. And this has been since 2018. The pilot ends 2021. At this point, past midway, there's been no complaints, no problems. So, of course, everyone's hopeful it will continue. And I suppose if it gets the green light, the big okay, the across-the-board okay for all of Toronto, we'll be seeing an increase in the numbers of chickens, the number of people interested in keeping them. I think this is a very, very timely conversation we're having, because as much as I would love everyone to go out and get chickens, I don't want you doing it unless you're ready and willing to educate yourself, put in the work, do it right, because the last thing we need are chickens not being looked after well. I've always said, because, you know, a lot of time the animal rights people or the vegans get very upset with backyard hen keeping. They don't like it. They don't want it. It's just another way to enslave animals as far as they're concerned. But what I say to them, every chicken in a backyard, even if it's less than perfect, is one less hen in a factory cage. And that's the bottom line to me. And yes, not every coop in the backyard is perfect. Not every citizen is a perfect chicken keeper. But it's, no matter what the situation, it's 1,000 times better than living a miserable 18 months from cradle to grave in a wire cage.
Let's talk about the backyard coops, because I think when you were in Toronto, you were quite enamored with, what was it called, the igloo? Tell me a little bit about that.
I didn't have one, but I knew people who had them, and they were really cute. And what they were was a company called Omelette out of the UK had come up with this igloo, which was very compact because, of course, the backyards in downtown London and in the posh areas are quite tiny, and of course they have standards to keep. And so these were very modern, very good-looking, compact little coops called igloos, and they came in crazy colors like, you know, fuchsia and bright green, and they were nice, and I know some people got them, but the problem was they were made for the UK situation, which I don't think they have raccoons the way we do, and the mechanism that shuts the little door on the igloo is too easy for a raccoon to open. So I know some folks that had a raccoon attack of their igloos because the raccoons with their little opposable thumbs and everything can just open almost anything. So right. I don't necessarily recommend the igloo here unless you are putting it within a well-contained run.
So let's talk a little bit about what you're doing in. Now, you're in Port Hope, so you were.
I moved to Port Hope in 2017, and the house came with a rather big garden shed. So I just said, okay, I'm going to rework the garden shed. So I added nest boxes and roosts and a drain in the middle of the floor, and then I built a run attached to it with good strong wire mesh and doors that locked, and they're in there. Now, there's a misconception around the types of wire to use for the run. It's super important to use, there's two different names for it. I've heard it called wire mesh, and I've heard it called hardware cloth. And it is that really tough, rigid, square wire. And I don't go bigger than quarter inch, because even a half inch, a small weasel can, I mean, if their skull bone can fit through, the rest of the body kind of collapses and they turn to liquid and go right through. But that's the thing. And I see coops going up with chicken wire, and I'm like, oh, it won't be long.
So how many chickens do you have in Port Hope now?
Right now I have 4 bantams. So that equals 2 regulars, because they're about the size of pigeons.
Right.
They're really tiny. They're 2 silkies and 2 cochins, and they're both basically show chickens.
Right.
And they're all just show chickens. They've got feathery feet and crazy hairdos, and, you know, they're really pets. And, in fact, they've all stopped laying at the moment. I'm not even getting eggs. That's the thing, too, that I was talking with someone last night. And if people do this thinking that they're going to get, you know, they're doing it for the saving money on eggs, forget it. These are the most expensive eggs you'll ever eat.
Right.
until the coop has paid for itself, which could be years and years and years, because it's expensive. You know, I spent $4,000 building fences and the run and retooling the coop. I don't think I can eat that many eggs. I don't think I'm ever going to recoup that. Ha, ha, ha.
Right.
I can't believe that came out. I don't think so, because... And then there's the vet bills. I'm approaching it as a pet chicken owner. If you're living out in the country and you want to raise hens strictly as livestock, while the same rules stand for, you know, building a proper coop and all of that, you're not going to give them names. You're probably going to have a large flock of leghorns or red sex links who are the best layers. They're all going to look exactly the same to you. And when they stop laying, you'll probably slaughter them and put them in the freezer for soup because they're not good eating. But the little carcasses do make very good broth. They have a lot of flavor because they've lived a long life and they've been out, presumably, foraging, free-ranging, because otherwise, what's the point? But the same thing still hold true in terms of how to make your coop. You know, the other thing that I see people doing that scares the bejesus out of me is they'll let their girls free-range in their yard, which is just this wide-open, grassy buffet for anything that wants to take them from the sky. There are raptors, hawks and falcons, who would love a nice juicy chicken. This is part of the initial investment. Put in shrubs, put in trees, dot it all around, even put in some lawn furniture in the area. Whatever you can think of putting in that area, because if a hawk or a falcon looks down and doesn't see a nice clean landing strip and a takeoff area, it won't bother. Plus, when the girls notice the death from above, they'll hide under a shrub or a lawn chair or a table. I say to people, you know, you want to get chickens, do it, absolutely. But I think that first step is to prepare your area. Make sure the whole perimeter of your yard is fenced in properly. And I mean right down to the ground, because everyone wants to get your chickens. Just know that. Going into this, everything in the environment wants to eat your chickens.
You know, as I listen to you, I'm thinking you might not get eggs. It's really expensive to start. Like, you're really not selling me on it yet. So
no, but it's not for everybody. And I would rather be honest about what it costs and what the risks are, because people find out later. I'm on several online chicken Facebook groups, and I see every single day, several times a day, multiple times a day, something got in and ate all my girls last night. I'm heartbroken. Oh, a hawk took my sweet little Silky last night. Devastated. A fox got in. Coyote came last night. The neighbor's dog jumped the fence. You hear it every single day. In the colder months, if a day goes by, I don't see somebody's heat lamp exploding and burning down the coop, that would be a miracle. And I say again and again and again, just say no to heat lamps. They don't need them. People, stop putting in heat lamps. It's unnecessary. I interviewed a woman from my book who is up in Alaska. Very, very, very cold. She doesn't have a heat lamp. This is why I say, please, please, please do the research. Not only is it a horrific thing to wake up to see them all either gone, nothing but feathers left, or the coop smashed and bits of bodies, or watch it go up in flames with them in, then you can't do anything about it. That would be devastating.
Let's talk about your book for a minute, because you wrote a book back in 2015, I think, called Happy Hens and Fresh Eggs. So in that case, the hens did produce eggs.
Yeah. You know what? I had, they were younger and they were producing. But here's the thing that people need to know, and I see this all the time too. My hens have stopped laying eggs. What's wrong? It's nature. They take cycles. They take breaks. Hens will stop laying for a number of reasons. They'll stop laying if it's terribly, terribly hot. They'll stop laying if they're too cold. They'll stop laying if they're not getting enough sunshine hours. So in the wintertime, I do have a little sad lamp that's in the coop. It's one of those seasonal affected disorder mimics sunlight, and it gives them vitamin D, and it's not heat producing at all, but the vitamin D helps them get through the winter just like people. They'll stop laying if they go broody, oh, you name it, and they'll go into full-on henopause when they're done, just like women. Right. So you have to go into it with two mentalities. These are your pets. You're going to love them even after they stop laying eggs, and they're just going to become these wonderful, adorable, living garden ornaments who eat ticks and bugs and fertilize your garden and give lap cuddles. Or you're going into it as a small-scale farmer, and when they stop laying or they go broody, they get met with the axe. And that's the first That's the first thing a person needs to decide. How am I going into this?
And if people do decide to go into it for whatever reason, what would you suggest, apart from your book, what would you suggest people dive into?
Right. I've got a few books that I really like. There's one called My Pet Chicken Handbook by Lisa Lucas and Tracy Torres. There's a book called The Chicken Encyclopedia, an illustrated reference. I have little sticky notes on so many pages of this one. It gives you everything from a cross-section of the internal chicken and just all different diseases, and it's absolutely indispensable. Again, that's the Chicken Encyclopedia by Gail Damoreaux. And there's a lovely one. It's just adorable. I love it. It's called Mini Rose Love Greens, Recipe for Raising Chickens. Simple economical ways with chicks, eggs, broody hens, laying hens, and general chicken care. And I think she put this out on her own. She was a gal, lived on a farm in the Midwest in the U.S. somewhere, and she did her own little illustrations, and it's handwritten parts, and I believe it was produced originally in the Depression in the 1930s, and it is absolutely charming, but full of good information, and right on the cover and running throughout the book is her philosophy, and that is the main thing is to keep them happy. And she is absolutely right. The main thing is to keep them happy. If you can keep them happy and healthy, that's what it's all about. You'll have friends. You'll have a very rewarding relationship. So, yeah, Minnie Rose died in 1975. So she was quite old when she died, too, at 86. So she wrote this a long, long time ago, and it really, truly is just charming. So if you can find that, I would recommend that. And another woman I recommend, I'm not going to list all her books because she's very prolific, but her website is called Fresh Eggs Daily, and it's Lisa Steele. And she's living on a farm in Maine, but she's basically the go-to chicken lady in the U.S. She's just a wealth of knowledge. And there have been many times when I've encountered something, I've gone out to the coop, I've been hanging out with the ladies, and I've spotted something that I was like, what is this? And I didn't know, and I thought, you know, no time to dig through the books right now. This looks like an emergency. Quickly go online, Google what I'm seeing, and up will come her site saying, that looks like this, and here's how you treat it. So it has been a lifesaver because, believe me, there will be emergencies. You know, they get themselves injured. And because they're birds and prey animals, right, they're used to being hunted. Like, that's in their DNA. They're nervous because they're always hunted. And they know that if they look lame or ill, they will be the first to be hunted. So they keep it hidden, which isn't great for us, because by the time we see them limping, or by the time we see them fluffed in a corner, looking miserable and droopy, it's usually too late. It's usually too late. So one of my big pieces of advice that I say all the time is go and hug your chickens every day. Like, I mean, if you've got a small flock, you can go out there and sit out with your chickens for an hour a day with your morning coffee, whatever. It's meditative, it's zen, it's very nice. Pick them up. Pick each one up in turn. Give them a squeeze. Give them a check over. Have a look. Because if you don't do that every day, then all of a sudden one day, one of them will be looking like it's half dead. You'll pick it up and there'll be, say, fly strike or a great big abscess infection that if you'd spotted 2 weeks earlier would have been easy for you to fix in the kitchen sink. But now it's going to be fatal. So it's really super important when you first get your hens, give them lots of cuddles, hold them a lot. Also because you need to be able to catch them and round them up when there's an emergency of some sort. So it's really great advice to have a good relationship with them where you can pick them up, handle them when you need to. And one thing I always say is get them trained on a treat. If I have to go out and I need to get them in from free ranging and into the run, and so I can lock them up when I'm not here, but it's the middle of the day and they're scattered all over and they're under bushes and they're pecking for bugs and they do not want to come in, there's no way you're going to catch them. No way in the world. So what I do is I stand in the run and I shake a bag of their most favorite treat which is raw, unsalted, shelled sunflower seeds, just raw sunflower seeds. They hear that and they come running, and not only is it effective, it's hilarious to watch. It's worth it. Get your young chicks. If you get chicks, get them trained up on a treat so that you can control them.
Well, Signe, thanks so much for joining us and filling us in on chickens, and particularly pet chickens, because that's really seems to be your focus more than the eggs in some ways. And so it's been really nice.
Yeah. It kind of works out like that. You start off getting lots of eggs. When I first had them and they were young and prolific, man, I had bowls and bowls of eggs on my counter, like, ah! And that's when I wrote the book. I was like, 100 egg recipes, here we go, you know? But then as they age, they slow down and you know, things happen. So I would say I'm definitely much more along the small flock, urban hen, backyard flock. Yes, they give you eggs, but they're pets with benefits. They are the pet that lays breakfast, you know, if you're lucky.
Okay. Well, thanks very much for filling us in on them. I really appreciate your time.
My pleasure.
That was Signe Langford chilling with her girls in Port Hope, Ontario. Ben Cullen and his father Mark wrote about hops as an ornamental in the 2020 edition of the Harrismith Almanac, so I wanted to catch up with Ben to get the lowdown on how a key ingredient in beer can also be an important part of a beautiful garden. Here's our chat. Hey Ben, thanks for joining us. This time out we're going to talk about hops, but the piece that you wrote with your dad in the Harrismith Almanac 2020 wasn't so much about using it for brewing beer, although I want to touch on that, but as an ornamental. So let's talk through hops as an ornamental and why people should consider it that way.
Yeah, I think it makes a great ornamental because it's got a unique little bud on it, and it's a great conversation starter when you're sitting around having a beer in your backyard and people see the hops creeping up behind them.
It is used in brewing beer, and it does have a very distinct, almost grapefruit smell that is prevalent in I find in a lot of craft beers, maybe too much in a lot of craft beers. Is that grapefruity, citrusy smell, is that comes through if you use it as an ornamental as well?
It does, only vaguely. I've certainly never picked it up by walking by it. Maybe someone with a more sensitive nose than I. But there's certainly, I would say they look like how they smell in a sense. And they give that kind of bitter texture almost, even in a floral bouquet or as a vine. They've got a really neat look to them as well as an ornamental.
And when I see pictures of hops being grown for brewing, I mean, I see, you know, old guys on ladders going up like 10, 16 feet harvesting these stuff. So it really does grow like a crazy vine, right?
It does. The infrastructure is so important with hops. To have it's called a bine. Sounds like vine, but it's a bine that twines up the wire. And without that, they just kind of flounder, right? So it's important to plan ahead if you're going to try growing hops. And give them some vertical space, because certainly that's what they require to really thrive and to really produce. And that also makes them kind of a neat opportunity, because there's not a whole lot of vines with varying textures that you can use around the garden.
And is it invasive at all?
I haven't had a problem with it personally, nor his dad where he is. It's perennial, and it tends to die right back to the ground. In fact, you prune it off at the bottom each year. You might find the rhizomes spread out a bit, but typically not, because they need something to grow up, right? So it shouldn't cause too much of a problem unless it starts finding up, say, like a woody plant nearby. But it will die back to the ground every spring.
It spreads across, like if you set up the bines in a wall, it would just grow up those walls and just fill in on both sides, right?
It doesn't have the tendrils like a lot of climbing vines to actually stick onto the brick. But if you were to train it up a wire, certainly you could have that effect.
You know, you mentioned it comes from rhizomes. So you're planting the rhizomes. How close, far apart that should you put the rhizomes to get a good sort of spread of, you know, hops hedge, so to speak?
Hops hedge. I like that term. Well, you'd want to put them. So again, it's important. The depth is important, about 4 inches deep. And then I would put them about 4 to 6 inches apart if you want that vining look. if you were to maximize production, you'd probably put them further apart and have some a gap in the spacing. It depends on your goals. But if you want sort of a steady mass, 4 to 6, you don't want them too far apart. So about 6 inches apart would probably be plenty. And you want to plant those rhizomes in the early spring.
So is this something that could also cover like a frost fence if you happen to have a piece of property that's got a frost fence between you and your next door neighbor? Or is this, does the vines have to be a specific thing?
You could. I mean, it certainly it would work for the summer, but they're going to die off and go brown for the winter. So you might want something that's sort of more winter hardy for privacy, but they definitely work throughout the summer season.
Now, in your piece, you mentioned growing it for ornamental, and you mentioned that a neighbor is growing it for making beer. Have you guys done that for beer as well, or is it just growing hops for ornamental for you guys?
We are not brewers. I wish we were brewers, and we should get into that. Our next-door neighbor grows for a commercial brewery. I think he's connected. His buddy owns quite a large commercial brewery. And there has been indeed a hop shortage with the growth of the craft beer industry in Ontario and with so many craft beer brands, rightfully emphasizing local, we've seen a lot more hop growing operations come online. And I think they even have their own association of growers in the province to supply the craft beer industry. And some really neat places. They've even got on-farm breweries. There's one out near Bayfield where you drive in through the field. That's Bayfield, Ontario. You drive in through the field of hops to get to the brewery, which is really quite a thing.
Wow. So if people wanted to grow it for making beer or for ornamental, where would they get the rhizomes? What's the best way to start?
I would go to an online seed supplier. West Coast Seeds is where I got mine, and they mail them to you, and it's a live rhizome. So you can't, this isn't like dried seeds, right? And that's really important. Ideally, you want to plant it as soon as you receive it. They will keep for a few weeks in the fridge, but you want to order them late in the winter, early in the spring, so that you have the opportunity to put them right into the soil.
Great advice. Thanks for sharing your tips on hops, and I hope you get to grow some Cullen beer in the future.
Yeah, we'll work on that. I'll have to talk to my wife. Maybe we can get a still set up in the kitchen here.
That was Ben Cullen, about to hit his dad up for a brewing shed. So, here we are at the end of this episode of Harris Smith Radio. I hope you enjoyed it. If you did, please consider subscribing to this podcast on Apple, iTunes, or in your favorite podcast player. And please, tell your friends and family. Got feedback? We'd love to hear it. You can email us at letters@harrissmithmag.com. That URL, harrowsmithmag.com, is also where you can order subscriptions online. And you can find Harris Smith Magazine on selected newsstands across Canada. Until next time, for Harris Smith Radio, I'm Wayne McPhail. And also, until next time, remember these four words: make, grow, sustain, share. Tune in for the next episode of Harris Smith Radio.